The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
J.R. Peters.
Hello.
And Sean Riley.
Hi there.
Here at the Mediocre Movie Club, we select three movies every month, and we write reviews of them on our website at mediocremovie.club, and then we get together to discuss those same movies on a podcast. And this last month, our three movies were Midsommar. Midsommar? Should we just commit to Midsommar as we go through this?
No, I'm going to say Midsommar.
Midsommar?
I'm definitely going to say Midsommar.
You boring motherfuckers. Midsommar, yeah. Midsommar, Troop Zero, and Dark Places. So we're going to weight this conversation heavily towards one of these movies because the other two, we're just not going to have a whole lot to say about. We didn't pick well this month. I'm going to go ahead and assert for the group. As far as movies with a lot to chew on, we did pick Midsommar, which is quite gristly. There's a lot there.
I was trying to explain to Blair what kind of movie it was, and I have no idea where the hell to where to classify this movie.
Yeah, we're a week late in recording this, and usually if we're recording a podcast about a movie that is also being discussed in my other movie podcast that I listen to, I will put it off until after so as not to be poisoned by their discussion. But I've already listened to your film spottings and your slash films and your culture gab fests and so on about Midsommar. And what these professionals describe this movie as belonging to the genre of was folk horror. But even then, they could only name one example from that genre.
The Witch?
The Wicker Man.
Oh, The Wicker Man.
Okay. Sure. The Nick Cage one and the original
Jesus
as well.
Jesus God. Not even a good movie.
The original Wicker Man is quite good. Yeah. But I'm sure the Nick Cage one is a delight.
I left the theater on that one. I went into I paid money to see that and
didn't even make it to the fees.
Yeah, gladly let that sunk cost go. I was just like, fuck this movie.
That's I'm smart. Out. Midsommar is Ari Aster's second film after Hereditary. It is about a woman who is going through a really terrible family trauma, and she has a boyfriend who is on the cusp of breaking up with her, but can't because of said trauma. We'll talk about that specifically, but her boyfriend is a grad student, friends with grad students. They're going on a vacation / investigatorial journey to a Swedish village, an isolated Swedish village, for a rare occasion, for a rare ritual ceremony that this village undergoes every 90 years, and things go from there. It's not necessarily a surprising movie in that what happens in it is exactly what one would expect to happen given that premise. But moment to moment, it is quite surprising.
Yeah. My boss, I was trying to explain to my boss, and I was like, yeah, it's like a kind of cult movie. He's like, was there weird sex in there? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. There is quite a bit of weird sex in here. There's a lot of drugs. There's some death rituals, several death rituals, animal skins. Lots of fun stuff.
Was the best part.
So let's just go around the horn real quick. Initial impressions on Midsommar before we start digging a little deeper. JR?
I thought it was great. One of my favorite movies of 2019. I think it should have been nominated for Best Picture. But, you know, that's just me, you know. I liked it better than, like, 1917, for sure.
Yeah, though. All right. Shane?
I thought this was a very good movie. Enjoyable to watch, and I'm going to think about it for a long time. There's some serious plot holes and some weird shit, but overall enjoyable. Probably a B for me if it wasn't for the lovely visuals, and I mean that all around, just lovely visuals.
This is the second movie in a row where Ari Aster includes old naked bodies. We'll say for shock value, if we're being uncharitable. This is officially a pattern. Two in a row, the guy likes to put old naked bodies in his movies. Riley, what'd you think of Midsommar?
Well, I think initially I was clouded by knowing the critical praise for it and the pretty pictures and, you know, of course, the old naked bodies. And I had it initially at a B-. Topper quickly talked me down to around a C. I think I let him talk me down maybe too low, so maybe C plus, but all in all, I just didn't care. So I will not be thinking of this movie for months to come like Shane is, and I've pretty well already forgotten most of it.
I'm closer to JR than I am to Riley. I am a fan of this movie. I saw it twice. I saw it once in theaters and again in advance of the review at MediaCommovie.club, and it works a lot better on a rewatch, despite being, I want to say, 2.5 hours long, if not a little longer. There's a director's cut out there that's almost 4 hours. That's probably a little too much. But I enjoyed scene to scene, just seeing how it unfolded. We mentioned the visuals and the production design of it. If not for Best Picture, it 100% should have been nominated for like Best Production Design or Best Costuming. You can't make a dress made out of flowers and not have someone, you know, sing your praises.
Well, they do that every year in the Rose Bowl parade. It's not that hard.
All right. Well, that seems less impressive. There are unquestionably plot holes. There's different versions of this movie that could have been made. There are choices that are somewhat baffling in this movie, but I just don't really care. It is druggy, and in a druggy movie, you kind of have to get on its wavelength and just let it take you on a ride. And I was taken for a ride by Midsommar. So where, if anywhere, are your sympathies in this movie? Because we're going to talk about the entire movie, and the movie ends with our lead, Danny, played by Florence Pugh, having sentenced her boyfriend, Christian, played by Jack Rayner, to a fiery, paralyzed, bear-suited death. And we see the only smile that crawls across her face as credits roll. Is this a triumphant moment in the movie's telling, or has she been captured by this cult? Is the cult even that bad?
Well, it did murder. Outright murder four people.
They did. Yeah. Yes. They're bad. But are we happy for Danny in the end? What do you guys think?
I'm a big no.
Okay.
I don't think that was a good place for her to end up. But she's probably going to be happier now. So.
Yeah. Like, she's not going to stay within the cult now. She's in her 18-year period of, like, exploring the world. She's going out to do whatever. And she'll be dead by the time this happens again. We're going to talk about the murals later in this episode. The murals that describe essentially what's going to happen. Like, those are there because nobody that is alive at this current ceremony is going to be around for the next ceremony. So they have to transmit this information somehow. She's never going to have to murder anybody. She's going to, you know, just get to live her life, and one day she'll jump off a cliff. But in the meantime, you know, she'll be okay.
Yeah. She's cured of a bad breakup.
Deserving, Christian, like, at a premiere of Midsommar, the actor Jack Rayner was present for a Q&A, and he was curious. He asked the audience, like, what did you all think of the ending? Did Christian get what he deserved? And he was deeply disturbed by how many hands went up. How are your sympathies with him? Do they shift at a certain point? And I kind of suspect the answer to this question from Riley. Are we just watching a series of events happen to people that we don't really care about, or where are our investments? Riley?
So, okay, since I get to start, I don't think he deserved to be burned alive in the shack, of course, but if I'm going to rank the most recognizable characters in the movie, I'm going to go with the friend who thought he was going to go and just get fucked up and have sex all week for his vacation, that was disappointed that the girlfriend tagged along. That was a recognizable person. I can imagine being in a murder cult, so I think any of the cult members are semi-recognizable. Chitty, I believe, is Chitty, yeah. the guy we've decided to call him. I can imagine somebody who's just really into getting all the info on his thesis. I'm not that guy, but I can imagine that guy. But the boyfriend, yeah, he's not recognizable. I mean, he's not 100% a dick, but who really is, right?
So, like, the people that, and then Danny, of course, as well. But, like, as far as her recognizability, she's going through, like, the most extreme, the most extreme dissolution of her family that there could possibly be.
Like, well, yeah, that was awful. But she seemed like a bad girlfriend from the start.
Well, yeah, just a deeply flawed person who in need of therapy. And, yeah, then the worst possible thing happens to her, so...
Yeah, like, she seems, well, she seems okay. She seems just worried in that initial...
It seemed like from the initial conversations they're having that she was high anxiety and worried about things and was a bit of an enabler. And
But she turned out to be right about worry.
Yeah,
she was anxious because her sister sent what is clearly, I'm going to kill myself message.
Yeah, but it sounds like that wasn't the first time. So,
sure, yeah. I was just having a conversation with Blair about someone in college who, after we had graduated, a member of our fraternity, who had frequently talked about killing himself. And I was thinking, God, what if I was president at that time? And it was like the fourth time it happened. I would just be like, just fucking do it already. Stop wasting my time.
Enough of the mental energy.
I'm sick. I'm sick of, you know, I'm sick of putting myself through this all the time. Stop, yeah. You know, trying for attention. And I'm sure that is not just me being callous. I'm sure that's part of it.
That's definitely a big part of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's about an 18:20 on the phone call, Shane, in case you want to help him delete that part later.
No, that'll probably stay in.
They don't care about morals in the biology lab, so he's fine.
It's just at a certain point, it's seeking attention, and yeah, like in that moment, she's recognizable, Danny. In that, I'm concerned, but she's done this before. I'm being held hostage by this person.
I think she's recognizable the entire movie. Like, it totally, every decision she makes sense to me. I am fully on board. I think her character stays consistent the entire time, and that is something a real deeply troubled person, everything that she would do.
And I think that's an important part of any horror movie, because so often the knock on them is these people are making decisions that no human would make, because the goal of this movie is to get to the gore and the blood. If you're making a subpar exploitative horror movie.
Like that commercial where they hide in the shack behind the chainsaws.
Exactly, yes. So perhaps one's ability to really latch on to Midsommar is if you're able to rationalize the choices the characters are making. Because, yeah, the characters are making strange choices. They're making choices to stay every moment they're not leaving. They're making choices to continue to drink the lemonade that seems a darker shade of red than everyone else's lemonade that is around me. I wonder what that's about. They're not sending back the pube pie.
Well, I think I think Christian's character changes the most throughout the film, which is just kind of great. Like, he's pretty much a someone with just to support the other person. I can't think of what term I'm thinking of, but he's okay.
But yeah,
sorry. Christian changes the most throughout it. He starts off as someone who's overly there for his girlfriend when he should have broken up with her a long time ago. Continues to be with her, lets her go on this trip they shouldn't have done. Doesn't tell her about the trip. But all of a sudden, by the end, he's just like kind of making decisions. He's going to do the thesis. He has a weird conversation. Like, the weirdest part of this movie, I thought, which is a weird movie, was immediately after the suicide, he goes and is like, hey, I'm going to write my thesis about this. Like, that was a weird time to have that conversation.
This came up so much in the other podcast I listened to. I totally buy that. I 100% buy it.
But he didn't strike me as an academic before that. There's only one academic on this trip, and now all of a sudden he's going to be like, well, I'm an academic. I don't want to do this thesis effort.
Once you realize that these dudes are weird, like, the weirder they are, the easier to write your thesis is.
100%. Yes.
So yeah. Like, it's not after,
like, you don't have to really do research once niggas start jumping off of.
That's why it made sense that he would do it.
Yeah. Like, once dudes start jumping off of cliffs, just, and then you watch a dude bash it. You watch people bash people's head in with a a hammer from Acme, like,
yeah, you can get like a solid 3 pages on just the history of this hammer, what kind of tree was it carved from, who did the carving, yeah, and so on and so on and so on.
Like,
yeah,
you're easily writing a thesis paper now. Like, that's 100% believable. He's like, oh, these dudes are crazy, this is gonna be easy.
No, I think getting into that is I think saying, okay, I'm gonna write my shit about this shit now, but just that I just literally, like, they just died and like 45 minutes later, if even, here, I'm gonna go to the other academic would be like, hey, I'm stealing your shit, and we're doing this. Someone who's never shown any competitive spirit or pep or vim up until that point shows it a little bit about this.
Yeah, they didn't have to have that conversation. He was gonna write it in 48 hours anyway, so he could have just done it when he got home.
Yeah,
and I think there you kind of see the machinery of the movie, because you need to get Chidi, William Jackson Harper, whose name in the movie I don't remember. You need to get him into the forbidden church where the book is that the inbred guy writes. It's a weird movie. And he's not going to go in there if he thinks he's the only person writing the thesis. So you have to push him to transgress against a community that he probably wouldn't otherwise. He seems the most studious out of all of them. So he has, you would assume some level of respect for whatever anthropological target he's chasing. And you need, again, what just felt completely true to who that character is, to who Christian's character is, that he would just scoop up something that Chidi had probably been working on for a very long time and want to collaborate. We're going to come back to Christian specifically, but while we're talking about grad students, do you think Ari Aster, you know, I kind of detect a little bit of this. He has an MFA himself. He's been to grad school. Do you think he, based on how badly he makes grad students look in this movie, he's like holding a grudge against them? Does he have bad memories from getting his MFA and like he's just skewering a certain type that exists there? I don't know. I haven't been to grad school.
Wait, am I the only one who's been to grad school?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really count because law school and everyone
That's
sucks.
True. Yeah.
No, I think, well, actually, just honestly, to relate it, just how petty everyone is, mm-hmm, and how about dumb shit and how like,
territorial,
petty for no fucking reason. Like, why couldn't they both write the same goddamn thesis? Who gives a shit? You're writing separate shit. And I thank God I was old when I went to grad school, because I'm like, I don't care about this shit. I'm going to pick the professor whose kid I coach, and that's who's going to grade my thesis. And that's what I did.
Smart.
Thank you. And I got an A-.
I think if these are, if everybody is like Mark the horn dog who pees on the sacred grave, if everybody's like him, the movie becomes immediately less interesting, I think. I think Chidi and Christian, again, recognizable is going to be the watchword of this conversation. Not knowing grad students, they just seem immediately recognizable as grad students. And without that, you lose a lot as far as being able to buy the outlandish events of this movie.
But the tree was already dead, John.
Yeah.
That's true.
That excuses it.
The whole forest was right there. Just take a dozen more steps and have a little modesty, I suppose. God. Ugly Americans.
Yeah.
What's to be done? We talked about Danny's specific psychological framework. To go back to Christian, and I a lot of times, if a movie for me just hits on one single thing that strikes me as true and spirals out from there, I'm going to grant it a lot of latitude. And the thing I think is especially true in regards to Christian is that, like Shane was saying, he's with someone who he should not be with, and he misses the moment when he should break up with her because all of a sudden her sister killed her parents, and he can't. It's impossible for him to break up with her now.
Correct.
And there isn't really a right time to do it ever. Does he have to just stay with this person indefinitely now? he's well, not.
Have you seen that Seinfeld episode where Elaine was dating the old man who had had a stroke?
Yes.
And yeah, and she just walked away. We should all be like Elaine.
Yes, and Larry David. There is an identical episode in Curb Your Enthusiasm where he's dating Vivica A. I think he's married to Vivica A. Fox at a certain point, and she gets cancer, and he just immediately divorces her and or leaves her.
that's an interesting twist on it. She's the one that gets left.
I don't know what I would do in that situation. I just have so much sympathy for both parties. It's like, just what's to be done? It's not good for Danny to be with a person who is not supposed to be with her, but just they're both completely trapped.
Well, even if it wasn't the scenario where her, you know, the entire family just died via murder-suicide, anytime you're in a long-term relationship that ultimately is going nowhere, it sometimes can be hard to break that chain.
But sure.
It's not easy to just cut bait and run.
Yeah, it seems like... Like, Mark is not a reliable witness. He comes off as a douche the entire movie. But he also comes off as correct in his description of Christian and Danny's relationship in that first scene, in one of those first scenes where she just doesn't... They don't seem to get along. She doesn't get along with his friends and vice versa. They're just bad for each other. But then this happens, and like, what's to be done? Nothing. You can't do anything.
Yeah, and I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to
tell. And it's not that he's a good boyfriend either. Well, like, he's a terrible boyfriend. He is constantly convincing her of things that are not true. He's constantly just making plans without informing her. There's lots of strikes against him. But it's just the central... Well,
Danny, I think, takes the advice of anyone I would say who's getting out of a long-term relationship. Don't talk to that person ever again. Just don't talk to him. And she makes sure at the end of the movie she's never going to talk to Christian again. So good job. Good job on that, Danny. You'd be a great person on the Reddit relationship page giving advice.
One of those plot holes, potentially. If she had picked the other guy, what would have happened to Christian?
I mean, I assume they let him go if there's any honesty and truth. And it seemed like they were very much formulaic in all this. I would hope so.
They weren't letting him go.
I agree with JR.
What? Well, there's no way they're going to let these dudes go and be like, oh, yeah, you're good to go. I know we just slaughtered the rest of these people you just rolled in with.
Yeah, and that's one. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just saying, agreeing that they would have found another, you know, old sheet that instead of lighting him on fire,
the scribbles of this inbred monster, we interpret it to mean that if you're not chosen, you actually also are tossed into the barn.
Yeah, that's a good point. Picking the other guy was the right moral choice, though, right?
Yes.
He seemed willing.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the morality that we're working with in that culture. So you go with that morality. Boom. Done. Pick the other guy, Danny. Come on.
There's something else that bothered me about who died in Midsommar is that the movie, like horror movies often do, it contrives a way for the victims to possibly get what's coming to them. Not, you know, murder necessarily, but they transgress in some way. And then they are killed in all cases. In like the English people that are tagging along, they curse everybody out and they just reject these rituals out of hand. And we mentioned Mark with the peeing and Chidi with the picture taking of the book, and Christian with his general shittiness.
But what did Christian do deserve?
He's just sex. A bad boyfriend.
But they gave him drugs to make him have sex. Like,
well, yeah, but she right, which is know which that. Is what they wanted so that chick could get pregnant.
So he just and they wanted. She didn't know that he was drugged up. Banging. Oh, this I'm chick.
Sure. Who? Danny or Maja, the red haired girl?
Maja.
Maja.
Danny probably didn't know that he was.
Yeah.
Essentially raped.
I don't think there's an essentially there. That is a. I think when you get drugged, led into a room by 15 strange chanting white women, that you're getting raped.
And then some old ladies.
Is it only white women?
Yeah. I'm not saying it's only white women. I'm just saying you don't ever see movies like this happening with a bunch of black people around.
Yeah, I think this contributes to Jack Rayner's horror at the screening where he's essentially a rape victim who was shortly after burned alive. After seeing, one of his compatriots strung up in a blood eagle in a barn, and he gets some paralyzing dust blown in his face, and then he is burned alive. Stuffed in a bear costume and burned alive. It's a fun movie. What a crazy sentence.
That bear costume's insulating, so it probably took a little bit longer for him to burn alive, too.
Or he probably burned slower as well because of all the bear grease inside of that. Although they did seem to be dissecting it and taking it apart really well, so maybe they cut out all that grease for...
Yeah, well, I'm glad they were careful not to puncture any of the
lamp
organs.
Lights. Yeah. Yeah, what are they, savages?
Yeah.
You gotta cook that liver later.
We mentioned the naked old woman pushing on Christian's butt. Is this movie a comedy?
It could have been.
A part of it is. I think it's almost a horror comedy.
I didn't think about it that way, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know.
This movie would have been like pop culture $100 million maker. Then you could eat the Wayans brothers easily could have done a Midsommar remake.
The other scene that comes to mind as far as the movie maybe being a comedy is that banquet scene where Christian is being seduced by Maja after having seen the murals that the group didn't see but the viewer sees, where we're gonna bake some pubes into a pie and we're gonna bleed into a drink and that's gonna do the trick. Just how long it takes and the look on his face, I think he's playing it as a comedy.
I think they're trying to have fun. They're trying to have fun. I don't know if it's a comedy, but they're definitely trying to have fun with a lot of it.
Yeah. Hereditary is in no way a comedy. I kind of think this is something of a comedy, especially on a second viewing. There were some good laughs in there.
Anything that where everyone ends up dying is a comedy for John, so.
Yeah. Did I mention how I... Did I mention how I imagine telling a suicidal person to just get on with it already?
Yeah. Were you disappointed? One of the reasons this isn't a perfect movie because the baby lives through this?
It's true. The baby did live. There were no children murders. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I met a bee. Last thing. There is a lot of crazy, strange imagery in this movie, not only in the events that happen to characters, aforementioned Blood Eagle, et cetera, there's all kinds of crazy drawings, crazy murals. If you've gone into the ephemera on the internet of fun background details in Midsommar, you may have seen the image in the forest of Danny's sister with the tube coming out of her mouth as she, it's after she just won the dance off.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Is that just weird for the sake of weird? Or does that get you guys anywhere? Just the fact that kind of stuff is in there, that that this level of detail exists, and to the degree of extremity that it lives at, is that to go back to the watchword, is that recognizable, or is that just this movie's fucking crazy?
I think in 2020, every filmmaker decides that they're going to throw in as many Easter eggs, for lack of a better term, as they can, so that people are going to talk about it.
Yeah, that's hard to disagree with.
I took a lot of that as this is her processing her grief and trauma throughout this. And it's forcing her to think about everything and react and just keep moving.
I mean, with the thing in the forest, like, it's not even a question of a scene where she is, like, staring into the forest high on mushrooms. I'm like, oh my gosh, did I see my sister? Like, no, she's walking past it. It's happening in the background.
Yeah. Walking past.
So that's for the viewer who's paying attention to an absurd degree. That's not for her, except in the, baldly, just the idea that you would put that magic eye nonsense into your movie is
it's just dumb. It's dumb at this point.
Yeah,
Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, maybe I missed that.
It's a fun image, not only because.
Yeah, and that's not the only one either. When people are jumping off, there's a face in the background. Like, it's just, there's multiple times he puts faces in the background just to fucking do it. Just to be like, oh, hey, look, I put a face in the background. Did you see that? Like, who cares, man?
I assume like the fucking movie. All of it was intentional. I enjoyed a lot of it that they don't stop to explain every fucking tradition.
Yes.
Like, it's obvious that when someone's in pain, the whole cult's in pain, so that's why they all yell together to be in unity. And no one stops and says, oh, yeah, that's why we do this. Did I get the accent right?
Yeah, it sounded great.
That was perfect.
Thank you.
Anything else on Midsommar, you sons of bitches?
I don't know. Who do you tell to watch this? Do you tell anyone?
I would tell everyone to watch. Yeah. Okay. Hereditary is not a movie that I would feel comfortable recommending to everybody. That is a deeply intense movie that I feel like has the potential to fuck the wrong person up in the wrong situation. I don't feel that with Midsommar. I think it's fun. If there's a person who is, you know, who doesn't have a problem with a long movie and doesn't have a problem with gore, because there is a lot of probably too much gore in this movie.
Oh no, give me more. I want to see that guy's skull get a little bit better. That lady's eyeball pushed into the back of her head.
When Danny is having a hallucination or a dream or something, does it go in reverse at a certain point? I can't remember.
Well, the mural goes in reverse at the beginning, so there's a lot of things that go in reverse.
But like the guy's head doesn't reassemble itself? It does. Am I imagining that?
It does.
Okay, yeah. See, yeah, that's just silly to me.
I think I'm into these visuals more than you guys are.
Maybe. I mean, I certainly like all the druggy stuff and the flowers and the environment and all that.
God, we got to do more drugs together, John.
Maybe. That'll stay in too.
Sounds like I need to move to Atlanta.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, yeah.
It's a black mecca.
Sean, you got to keep a job, so.
This is a good movie. This is fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Why would you just assume that I just want to hang out with black people? Maybe I just want to do drugs with you guys, and that's it.
Hey, that's why I moved to Atlanta. That's what I took. Our next movie is Troop Zero. This is Amazon's first direct release movie of theirs, and that kind of implies a level of chintziness, but Viola Davis is in this movie. Allison Janney is in this movie. That's two Oscar winners right there. Jim Gaffigan is in this movie, et cetera, et cetera. It is a throwback to your PG-rated kid romp movies of the type that a bored third-grade teacher might show their class on an off day. And it is, I want to say it takes place in the 70s. And it is about a girl whose mother recently died, and she lives in a trailer park. If not a trailer park, then a poor neighborhood in Georgia with her dad. And she gets into some scrapes and some romps with her friends as they try to put together a Girl Scout troop so she can get her voice onto Carl Sagan's golden record that will be shot into space and sent around the universe. What did you guys think of Troop Zero, Riley?
I liked it. To borrow from Scorsese, I don't know if I'd say it was cinema, but
nice.
It was cute. It, like you said, on those third grade movies, it reminded me of those types of movies, like you know, your Pippi Longstocking or some of those sports movies from the 90s, like The Big Green or The Little Giants. It was, you know, a cute kids movie that wasn't terrible to watch as an adult.
Shane did not watch this movie. JR, what'd you think of Troop Zero?
It was all right. I am not the biggest fan of just like the entire point of this movie is just like, we're going to make a feel good movie. And I typically loathe that shit. So the fact that I didn't loathe it is good. Like, I, as soon as it started and I could tell it was going to be, we're making a feel good movie, I was like, I was already down on it. Like, fuck this movie, whatever. I'm going to watch it so I can join the podcast for the first time in like a year. Then I came out and I was like, okay, this wasn't terrible, but also I was just surprised that Jim Gaffigan didn't ruin the movie for me as well.
He's been showing up more and more in movies like this. Not necessarily like your family-friendly kid romp type movies, but I see him all over the place. He's building that IMDb page out. I want to talk about movies that your board teacher showed you in school more later. But first, as far as Troop Zero specifically is concerned, we talked a lot about recognizability and a corollary to real life in Midsummer. And as far as Troop Zero is concerned, did you guys feel this was a recognizable place in Georgia in the 70s, where in the poor part of town, all races and all sexual orientations are united by the fact that they're all poor together? Because I did not. I don't know why this movie had to be set where it was exactly, but I just didn't buy the environment for a second.
I bought that the poorness and the races mixed. I didn't really buy the 1970s rural poor Georgia was pro LGBTQ.
Yeah, like they're gonna sit and applaud as a local boy cuts the hair of the blue bloods of the ladies. It struck me as incredibly false.
I could believe that because people will put up with anything if you're doing them a service.
I'm sure the ladies were fine with it. It's more the men.
Oh, the men that were applauding. I get what you're saying. Yeah. And he definitely, that dude would have, well, I don't know if he was he identifying as a male or female, or are they just...
I don't know.
Actually, okay. Doesn't matter.
Would have gotten the Girl Scout shit
beat out of them. Yeah. Would have gotten fucking destroyed all the time.
Were there no other little boys in this movie?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. Like, the people that were bullying him, I think, were also girls. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a key part.
The only guy in the entire movie, you're right.
Yeah, and this is a pretty forgettable movie, but the one other thing that I wanted to comment on somewhat negatively, even though I liked this movie well enough, I gave it a C+. Part of that is just because I'm susceptible to Carl Sagan anything, and some of the kid actors did work on me. But here nor there, this movie really leans hard into the Southern backwoods vernacular. Lots of finnas, lots of all kinds of other stuff. And like another movie that really leans heavy on the vernacular, Attack the Block, which I watched again a month or two ago, I don't know, a few months ago. There's a difference between like having characters speak how characters living at that time in that place would speak, and then there's like what we mentioned in Midsommar again, with the urge or the inclination to try and like strike some pop culture fire. Yeah, we're gonna start talking like the people, like the characters in this movie does. Like the characters in this movie do, because they repeat themselves so fucking often. Did that come across to you guys? Am I making sense? Like in Attack the Block, I watched it with a group of people, and everyone immediately noticed how much they kept repeating and repeating and repeating themselves. And Shane can back me up on this.
Attack the Block?
Yeah.
Yeah, bruv.
Yeah. Over and over again. And it smacked, and Troop Zero smacked of that in a way that just almost broke the movie for me.
So explain what you don't like about this, because you're like, we get it.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I understand in real life you might say that, but this makes for not good dialogue in a movie.
I feel like in real life you wouldn't say it with that much frequency.
They do.
I don't know, man.
I don't know about in a... I don't know about in
1970s
rural 1970s Georgia, but in Attack the Block, that's literally what people fucking sound like. When you're like, God, it's awful. It is awful. I will 100% admit it.
Okay,
it's not the best.
They
legit sound like that.
We found the bridge then. Okay, the truism of Attack the Block is found in how annoying the characters are. Okay, so that just proves my thought here. Well done, Attack the Block. So getting back to what I really want to talk about, movies you watched in third grade or high school or whatever by teachers who let's say your history department is dominated by football coaches and basketball coaches who don't want to teach about Kubler-Ross's grief process every day. Sometimes they just want to show you the field. Sometimes they just want to show you Field of Dreams and somehow relate it to that. Any experiences like that? Any inappropriate movies? Like, did a teacher ever gamble on, I think this movie will work for my high school students or my grade school students?
We definitely watched The Patriot once.
Oh, gosh.
Seems a bit much. And,
sure.
You know, it's historically accurate as it is.
Oh, God.
We watched Glory in high school.
I think I did, too. Yeah. We watched Amistad, but with the slave ship part cut out.
Jesus, you guys are old.
Well, I mean, it could be worse. Like, if I had gone to school by the time Passion of the Christ came out, I feel like that would have been de rigueur for a Catholic high school.
Oh, yeah, they would have been killing you with that.
Yeah.
I was in Catholic high school when that came out, and it was talked about, but it was never shown.
Passion of the Christ came out in 2004?
No. That can't be right, because I remember who I went to it with. I went to it with one of my high school friends. I can't imagine going to it during a Christmas break or something.
It came out in 04.
Huh. I must have watched it during Christmas break then.
Hey, bro. Let's go watch Passion of the Christ.
February 25th, 2004.
Then maybe worse. Maybe even spring break or summer vacation.
Oh, Jesus, God.
Living it up. My econ teacher showed us Trading Places in high school because it's got a lot of commodity trading in it, commodity futures, and
the '80s comedy. Skip over the boobs.
Heavy on the boobs. That went over great with a bunch of juniors in Catholic high school who were truly shocked and delighted that something like that would slip past the Catholic censors.
Did Modern Day have a Promise to Keep club like Cathedral did? Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but they did go to they went around to your various grades, to your various middle schools, and preached the gospel of no hand stuff.
Yeah, well, most of the girls in that club at Cathedral were not virgins.
I think that was also the case at Modern Day. Yes. You got to beef that resume up however you can.
Listen, you want to know how old you guys are comparatively? Whenever I was watching, whenever my teachers got tired of shit, they were like, yo, I think I'm going to throw on High School Musical 2.
Oh, my God. Wow. Like, that is cruelty. I feel like you got a case with Child Services.
He hit us with cruelty, the part two just to make it also offensive.
That shit came out like 2009 or 10.
Was there any like educational pretext associated with that, or this movie has high school in it, so we're just going for it?
This is Bedford, Indiana. They were like, we just hope you don't end up doing meth afterwards. I'm like, okay. Like that, their education was like, okay, so you made it to junior year without a kid. Congratulations.
Here's your reward.
Yeah.
Zac Efron, High School Music. Dancing around in a basketball jersey, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, terrible shit I had to watch whenever stuff was happening.
Troop Zero will surely join this cavalcade of delightful teacher distractions. But what will not is Dark Places, our final movie that I want to spend a total of 5 minutes on, because despite having Charlize Theron and Nicholas Holt and Christina Hendricks and Ty Sheridan and Chloe Grace Moretz, and being adapted from a Gillian Flynn novel who wrote Gone Girl and Widows and et cetera, et cetera, this is a fucking garbage movie, as directed by some French guy who has a shitty, shitty resume. And this being just one more entry upon it. This is a murder mystery. It's got some true crime stuff in it. It's got some satanic panic stuff in it. But mostly it's just a garbled mess of narration and way too much complicating factors into what should be a pretty straightforward murder mystery. What did you guys think of Dark Places?
I turned it off. This is good for you. This is an F movie. That's fine. This is a bad. This isn't even a good TV movie because they make good TV movies now. But this is a bad TV movie. Not even a fun bad. Just a bad bad.
Yeah, we shouldn't have watched this.
I think I gave it a C-. I didn't think it was hard to watch. Like it.
I would agree with that.
So turning it off wasn't really something that was a priority to me. I mean, easily, if you ask me to name the worst performance of Charlize Theron or Nicholas Holt's career, I can't think of one that would go in front of this. They were both two good actors doing bad things in the movie. And like you said, with the narration, within the first 30 seconds of the movie, when Charlize Theron just started dryly talking over things, I knew they were in trouble.
It was bad. How do you make Charlize Theron unlikable?
I mean, I'm trying to think of where she might have been worse. And I want to say that Seth MacFarlane Western comedy, but I bet she's delightful in that, as bad as that movie must be.
I'm sure she's fine in that.
Yeah. But here she's just, yeah. They give her so little to do. The movie cuts away from her so much. There's so many flashbacks through various different characters' perspectives. She talks about how tortured she is, while you would think all of that would manifest itself within her narration. That is essentially her inner thoughts, but it's all just generic. I'm angry at this thing that happened to me. Completely uninventive. Just a total dud.
They just never even bring up the fact that she just put her brother away for 30 goddamn years.
Yeah, then it's cut to adulthood, and just in case the viewer has never seen a movie before, we're given text on screen, adult Libby. I've never seen that. This is a first. Dark Places almost instantly left my brain. But what will linger forever is that this movie ignored all cinematic language and reminded viewers that the most famous person in the movie who's on the poster, who's on all of the marketing material, is actually the lead character in the movie.
If they would have skipped the first 12 minutes or so and just started with her at the murder party, she could have had a name tag on, and they wouldn't have had to dub that in.
That's a good call.
Zoom into name tag.
Hey, Libby, you're going to have to sign in. Yes, I recognize you from your newspaper clippings where your family got murdered.
But those are the rules.
Okay. We just talked about Hail Satan, and I mentioned in that podcast that I'm sure everybody listened to, we're very popular, how badly I would love a movie about the Satanic Panic in the 80s. And lo and behold, Dark Places kind of teases that just a tiny little bit. But it turns out that the town was right to worry about these people because they get high on meth and they murder cows and they bathe in their blood and they're actually Satanists who murder people. So pick a lane, movie.
Maybe I should have finished watching this.
It just made me so angry.
Good, bad.
Yeah, it was fucking stupid. I was also mad about why they actually got slaughtered. After watching the whole movie, I was like, God damn it. The fucking deader dude. Man, fuck this. Fuck this movie. Fuck everything about it.
You got mad at that? I was heading that direction the moment they introduced the deader dude, just walking by him, by the investigators at the true crime place.
I did not notice that at all.
they took a moment to point out, oh, these people are talking about the angel of death who, you know, erases people's debts.
Yeah.
Like, oh, why would you tell me this? Oh, because it's going to mean something an hour and a half from now.
Yeah, I did remember that when they fucking said we're talking about that. But I really just wanted it to be like a random fucking dude rolled in and just like killed everyone and dipped out. Was just, I don't know, just nothing.
What if it would have been Libby herself? That would have been great.
Just something.
That would have been better. That honestly would have been 100 times better than this movie.
Yeah. I guess it is kind of an accident anyways, but then you also have Chloe Grace Moretz's character going full Reefer Madness, where she just loses her shit and strangles a young child in a totally unrelated incident. Just at the same time that the Angel of Death serial killer is wiping out the rest of this family.
Well, let's right here make a pact. JR, when you move down, we all do all these drugs together. Let's promise not to murder any children when we're on drugs. Okay.
You can't promise that because drugs just get a hold of you sometimes.
No. You never know when I'm going to be in a house. Someone else is going to be in the house shooting someone to erase their debt. And I just happen to choke out their little sister. You never know.
Yeah, and there's goats like a block away from here. So maybe I'm going to murder all of them and bathe in their blood. Yeah. I don't know. When you take drugs, you just don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know what's going to
happen. You might completely lose control of yourself.
You just need to do one little key bump of cocaine, and then you might be doing some crazy shit.
Speaking of losing control of ourselves, Shane has a game for us.
I do. So we're done talking about Dark Places.
100%.
We did Steven Seagal before. Mm. This week we're gonna kind of thinking political. I've heard Dean Cain in the movies or in the news
He's
lately.
He's really reinventing himself.
We got three Dean Cain movies.
Okay. Much like Steven Seagal, I already feel like I have a way in to determining.
He actually has more of a diverse IMDb than I thought, but we're going to stick with the traditional. Would you believe this is a Dean Cain movie?
Okay, this is a dry run into this game that you haven't explained the rules to yet.
Dean Cain stars in a movie called 2050 as a robot pimp. Not a.
This is real?
He's not a robot pimp. He pimps robots. In a movie about a family man struggling to hold it all together until he discovers a parlor that offers a solution, sex bots.
I would believe he is any of those roles. I would believe
sex bots. Is he the family man or is he one of the robots?
I would believe family man. I don't know which act. Yeah, exactly. I don't know which character he is, but he could be any one of them.
But that was.
Does he find out he's a robot that was pimped to someone else later in the movie? They like try to tie it back to fucking Blade Runner somehow.
Was this before or after he got blackballed for being a Trump supporter?
As someone who's black, blackballed, he has like probably 50 movies in the past 10 years, easy. I think, but our TV shows. There's a lot. There's maybe not that much. But
Pure Flix exists. There's a market.
All right.
So what is this game?
This game is, I'm going to give you three movie plots, B-movie plots, from a noticeable actor. Noticeable, you know him. He's Dean Cain. Everyone knows him.
He would turn your eye if you saw him on the street.
That's right. Everyone knows him as the shortest Superman. And I'm going to give you three plots. You tell me which one I made up. Okay?
Okay.
So last week you did Steven Seagal last time. But first one, Horse Camp. When Kathy arrives at horse camp, she realizes she must deal with Stacy, the resident mean girl. As competition heats up, Luke, a counselor played by Dean Cain, helps Kathy learn to recognize the true value of real friendship and finds her inner confidence and ultimately uses it to spread a message of kindness to all the campers. High Horse. Trey, these are all horse-related, by the way.
Fantastic.
Makes it harder.
My thesis has crumbled into nothing.
High Horse. Trey Herringbone, played by Dean Cain.
Trey Herringbone.
reluctantly returns home from the Iraq War to take over a family farm after his father suddenly dies. After all of his crops fail, Trey discovers a dark family secret and with the help of a young local minister, confronts his family about the true cause of his father's death. Finally.
High Horse? That High movie's Horse. Called High Horse. High Horse.
All right. They probably grow an opium.
So, I hope so. A horse for Summer. Summer, a troubled teenager, steals money to save a horse on her uncle's farm. When the pastor, played by Dean Cain, finds out why she took the money and forgives her, his compassion and understanding change her way of thinking.
I think the first one is fake, and here's why. There's some strong conservative archetypes in the other two that I think Dean Cain would be all over. Whereas Camp Counselor, I feel like carries a certain stench with it that I don't think he'd be down for. What was it? Ex-soldier and farmer? Yeah,
and
first counselor. One's fake.
JR?
The second one's fake. Because that one seems like the most real movie. like the first and the third one are like some actual bullshit. And so you're like, this motherfucker got in one of these dumbass movies like this. Where the second one, you're like, I could see Bradley Cooper trying some bullshit, trying a movie like this.
Called High Horse in that case. No, but you're not wrong. The plot,
like that's a sounds like a plot like a to a normal movie. Yeah. Sounds like fucking Nebraska, you know, like that movie Nebraska. Like that sounds like some normal shit. There's no one in their right mind pitches the first movie. And so I think they made that without a doubt.
For clarification, are all of these movies real and you placed Dean Cain in one of them? Or did you make one of these plot descriptions up whole cloth?
One of the plot descriptions is made up.
Okay.
So to me, we're all on differing opinions because I think, without a doubt to me, number one is a real movie. I think number two is the most fake, but in the interest of all us all disagreeing, I'll say number three is the fake one.
Wow. Well, JR got it. High Horse has been made up.
See, that's the one I was going to pick.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's in another horse movie too. I had to cut one of the horse movies.
Four is too many.
That first one just sounds... What was the first one?
Horse Camp.
Horse Camp. I'm pretty sure I've seen that on, like, Netflix or something. It's available.
It's one of, like, four, I think. So, there's, like, Horse Camp 3.
Oh, it's a franchise?
Yeah, Horse Camp 3.
Horse Camp Extended Universe.
The last one's Glue Factory, but...
Oh, Jesus. Is this guy in all of them or just the first one?
I think he's just in the first one. I'm not sure. I didn't see him.
He's got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah. Trey Herrenbone is a made-up name, obviously, but not as bad as one of his other ones. His name is Mason Danvers.
Jesus.
That's, like, more made-up than Trey Herrenbone, I think. We're really struggling there.
Did you plagiarize the description of that second movie? Yeah, like JR was saying, it sounds like a reasonable movie.
I made that up.
All right.
Ben Affleck's going to make that movie in a few years.
Yeah, Ben Affleck starring in Ghost Coach out this Friday.
So there is no other recognizable actor in Horse Camp.
There's not. Check out you should see go to Dean Cain Vendetta. It's got Daniel Baldwin and Eric Roberts as well.
Ooh. Solid. That sounds okay. In the meantime, we'll be reviewing our next trio of movies when we're not scrounging for Nick Cage, Superman, Prince. Again, I don't know what's going on with our selection process, but this next month we'll be watching Alita: Battle Angel and Hamburger Hill, which I feel like is not good, but I don't know anything about it. I don't know. We'll see. I feel like it's just
100% Rotten Tomatoes.
Shocking. Shocking. And what's probably not 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, The Skulls. Yes. That'll be an experience for me.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I nominated like two legit fucking movies, and we got this shit.
Yeah, I don't know.
I nominate movies based on the ones that I am looking at the time on HBO.
Good call.
It's totally fair. Check us out on the internet at MuticMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Twitter, Munich Movie Club. I don't know what our name is on Instagram, but we're on there as well. I joined Instagram just to know what we were doing on Instagram. And I'm never going to post a photo.
Good job.
It seems fine. We're doing fine. Drew knows what he's doing.
Do we have a TikTok?
I don't know.
I'm going to work on that.
Okay, yeah, one step at a time. We'll be back next month to discuss another terrible actor and his very strange movie choices. And and stay tuned to our website for reviews of movies that came out about 8 months ago, because I'm slow in writing reviews. It Chapter 2, coming out soon. It's terrible. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.